Hey, everybody, welcome to Pucknology After Dark, brought to you by Audible.com. As you know, you can help us out by getting yourself an Audible account where you can get one free book, whether you like the service or not. You get to keep the book. And there's all kinds of audiobooks. I think there's something like 1.5 billion of them. Hashtag alternative facts. Check it out. It's going to be great. I'm glad you guys are all here today. It's afternoon. I'm hosting. That's when you know things have gone terribly, terribly wrong. With me, though, is Hockey Jerk. Hockey Jerk, how you doing?
I'm going to wait a couple minutes because you wouldn't like me before I have my morning coffee.
Oh, damn. Damn.
Side note, those people suck.
Yeah, everyone sucks. All right. You know what doesn't suck today, though? The Sharks didn't suck today, and it's about damn time. The Sharks, after, you know, giving up an early goal, and even though, you know, they outshot the Devils a bajillion to one in the, you know, it wasn't a bajillion to one, but it was a pretty significant shot differential in the first period, and the Sharks still managed to come out down by a goal, even though they had, you know, some 5-on-3s, they had some power plays, you know how it is. What quick thoughts on the game? What do you think?
I thought this was one of those games where the Sharks were in it, you know, the whole game, with a couple exceptions. I don't think there were really any times where they were very clearly outworked, save for maybe the first period. I thought after Brent Burns' first goal, it was all Sharks from the rest of the for the rest of the time. But man, Corey Schneider just keeps showing how good he really is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when I was looking at the team, I tweeted this out too, and I was, you know, and I apologize for being so salty this weekend. I've probably burned the candle a little hard on both ends of it, and it's probably affected my mood a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean a lot. but I tweeted out something like, you know, this game, this is going to be one of those games like they had against, Scrivens and at Edmonton that one game where they put like a bajillion shots on goal and couldn't get one through. Thankfully I was wrong, but after that first period, man, that's what I was thinking. And then we come back from the, you know, when the game starts, and then Randy kind of said the same thing, so I felt a little validated there for my saltiness. Yeah, I mean, Brent Burns scores that goal, and after that it was pretty much all Sharks. I mean, this is the team that we know the Sharks to be at this point in the season.
Yeah, they, even before this little stretch where they've lost, you know, four in a row or what have you, they won, I believe, 8 of their last 10 or something like that, which is, yep. I mean, any team that wins 8 of their last 10, more often than not, is a good team. But we've seen this pretty much all year where the Sharks will lose 2, 3, 4 games in a row, and then they'll just rattle off, like, a lot of, like, more wins than losses in any given streak. And it's nice to see that the Sharks have the ability to, you know, bounce back and kind of right the ship versus in years past where like things go off the rails and it takes a miracle to get things even back close to the rails.
Right. Yeah. You'd see like the Sharks, you know, in years past, I think it was like to me that the turning point of last season for me was the Detroit game last year, where they lost, but you know, you knew that they were the better team, and you knew if they kept playing like that, then things would kind of come together. It was nice to see that we didn't have to suffer like 3 more losses where, you know, yeah, I mean, this road trip was bad, but I'm glad it didn't take, you know, 3 losses of good hockey to kind of get them back on the right track again.
Right. And even though they did, you know, they only got, I think, 5 out of 10 points on this road trip, but even with that, they still made up ground created more separation just because Edmonton and Anaheim keeps losing in regulation. So there's never losing is never a good thing, but if there was right. ever a time to lose, especially in overtime, it would have been on that road trip.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not happy with the road trip. I don't consider this road trip a win by any stretch of the imagination. I think that, I mean, they looked good today against the Devils, but the previous games, I mean, they got points out of it, but I don't think that's anything that you should really, you know, pull your shoulder out trying to pat yourself on the back for either.
No, not at all. I mean, we said it after the game against Buffalo too. letting in three goals in the third period is, you know, it's unacceptable, especially, you know, other people, not myself, of course, mm-hmm. say that Buffalo is a winnable game. And so if it is a winnable game, then they should have won, and they should have won by 4-1. But I mean, obviously you're not going to win every game, but you should at least win the games that you're leading in.
Yeah. I mean, or at least look good losing, which they didn't. Like, yeah. I didn't think they looked that great in Buffalo, and they looked pathetic in Boston in yesterday afternoon, morning, whatever. I didn't think they looked overly fantastic there either. So, even though they got to overtime, like, whereas this game, there was a considerable pickup, by the team as far as how they played and what they were doing, you know, as far as kind of playing the hockey that we've seen them play while they were winning. You know, and look, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's still some good things to take away from the trip, I think. Not too much, but I thought that, you know, Hurdle and Timo Meier continue to look good together. Kevin LeBanc gets called back up, you know, wasn't even supposed to play, and Kevin LeBanc's been great. I don't know if we see him go back down to the AHL ever again at this point.
No, not at all. Especially, well, I mean, you know, he's got the two assists today, which already, you know, shouts big game. But something I've been saying pretty much since the first time they called him up was, if you watch his play away from the puck, he's always, you know, doing the little things and doing the right thing to keep himself out of trouble. And today more than anything was a big indicator of that. I mean, yes, he was on the score sheet, but he was also just a menace with and without the puck in all the good ways.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think that's what last year I thought, you know, during the regular season, I kind of, that was the same praise that I continuously heaped on Jonas Donskoy. Same thing, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe not putting up a ton of points, but you look away from what they're doing and you look at his play away from the puck and it's fantastic. The guy never gives up on a play. You know, he keeps going and LeBanc, that second, I think it was the second goal. He was just all over the place on that. Like he made all the things happen really. Like, so, I mean, I'm glad. I hope they keep him up on that first line. You know, he should have been in the top six to begin with. And the fact they started on the fourth line really made me angry this morning. I'm not going to lie. When I saw those lines, I'm like, really? Are you like, you know, it's like your guy who gets you a point is sitting on the bench. Now, obviously Jones had a good game, so that's kind of a moot point. And then Kevin LeBanc, who I thought was great last game, you know, one of the better, you know, top three Sharks on the team last night. And he's on the fourth line. It's like, where's the justification for that? But I mean, it all worked out in the end. LeBanc moved up the lineup during the game. And I think that, you know, I think that's good.
Yeah, I think LeBanc's undoing, or if you like this little funk that he was in, I think it really all started when he was yanked off of the Couture line, because I thought he and Logan had really developed a lot of chemistry. And, you know, it's always confusing when a guy looks like he's doing really well somewhere and then, you know, coach or GM or whomever is like, oh, well, yeah, you're playing well, but, you know, bye, go to the Barracuda. Like, that, I don't know. That just stood out to me as being like the beginning of this little funk that he was in.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. You know, so a lot of questions coming up, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this later tonight on the writer's room as well at 8:30 PM Pacific. So keep an eye out for that. After this little bump in the road here, like, Is this a team that needs to make a move? You know, are you happy with what's on the team right now? Do you think they need to make a move? If what's a player that you would go after?
It's hard to say because the guys that I felt should have been moved out at the deadline or before have already been moved out. You know, Wingles, Nieto. I think just in general, everybody needs to elevate their level of play a little bit. I mean, you know, you want a guy like Ward and a guy like Bodker and even a guy like Timo Meier to score, maybe not like every game, but just every, you know, couple games, at least put up some points or at least put up a good effort. I think if the Sharks do have to trade for somebody, I'm really looking at somebody who's like super low risk, but has a high upside, somebody like, you know, like P.A. Parenteau, who we saw today, or even Radim Verbata on the Coyotes, and you look at both of them, you know, close to the top of their teams in goals, and they're making like practically nothing. So it those are definitely guys you could fit into your salary cap, you know, whether it's retained salary or sending a guy down or any of that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think those are the kind of players that I would look at to target. I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday as well. You know, obviously, look, you don't want to break the bank. Like, you don't want to break the bank, I think, for this run. I don't know. How confident are you on this team going to the playoffs? Because, you know, I'm not confident that this is good, a team that can push four rounds through again.
I think this team is really good defensively. I think this is probably the best D-core they've ever had. And it's probably, you know, top five D-cores in the entire league. And obviously we know the story with Martin Jones. Mm-hmm. And I really look back to their inability to score goals. I mean, you look at after the All-Star break last year, the Sharks were one of the top teams in scoring goals. And I think they were averaging just under 3.5 goals a game versus this year. It feels like some games we're lucky if we score two. And then, you know, obviously power play is factored into that. And the silver lining in all of this is, like I said, at least the defense has been good enough to make up for the lack of goal scoring. But
right,
like I said, if the guys we have don't start heating up, then we may be forced to bring in somebody from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this is good, because if we all recall last year, I wasn't very confident about the Sharks' chances in the playoffs either, and look how that turned out. So so maybe my skepticism is a good thing. I don't know who in the West I would say is the, you know, the team to watch. Like, I think the West is jump ball this year for me.
I like Minnesota. I think they're the real deal this year.
Yeah, but Bruce Boudreau can't win a third round series. I can't win a game seven,
also
or a third round series. So I'm not too worried. No, you know what? I think that Minnesota's interesting, but I mean, there's no proven track record there. You know what I mean? Like, that's why, I think the Minnesota Wild could do something good. You know, Chicago obviously has the pieces that they could make another run. But I mean, besides that, I mean, you have the Sharks, you have the Ducks, but I don't feel like there's like a favorite to come out of the West right now.
Yeah, at least not right now. I mean, I remember, you know, in the summer saying that with a lot of confidence that the Western Conference final was going to be San Jose, Nashville. And as it stands right now, that doesn't look like it's going to be the case, considering Nashville is one of those teams, you know, kind of in between like the third spot in the division and the wild card. And I go back to Minnesota just because it feels like every year the, you know, critics or the reporters or whatever you want to call them have said, oh yeah, you know, this Wild team is the real deal. And then, you know, they lose in the first round or whatever. But I feel like this year they are actually the real deal. I mean, they have a good goalie. They have you know, an elite defenseman. And I think they're offense has heated up at the right time, and their young guys have taken good steps in their career at the right time. But I don't know if they cool down, then I don't know how that team shakes out, if they are still a contender or not. But at least as it stands right now, I think that they're probably my pick to come out of the West if it's not the Sharks.
Yeah, it's a good, I mean, to me, depending on where they slide in, it could be a good, maybe not a dark horse, but a dark horse pick. The East, I think it's just whoever comes out of the Metro, right? Like, whoever survives from the Metro division is the team to beat.
The Metro division is no longer meh.
No, it's not meh at all anymore.
Yeah, the Atlantic division this year is kind of like the Pacific division last year. Like, If the NHL like playoff structure didn't force three teams from each division to make it, I would almost be certain that all eight teams from the Metro could make the playoffs,
except for the division leading team from the, because that's always been a thing. Uh oh,
right,
angry child. What's the matter, dude? Vamp.
So the Sharks, they got the win, but again, I'm gonna borrow the drum from my good friend Mr. AJ Strong. Faceoffs again. I don't have the stats on front of me, but I believe they were under 50%, Ian.
I'm gonna look that up right now as we speak. Because I should have the stats in front of me, but I don't. Worst host ever.
Not only that, but you know, to borrow another drum.
No, it was 50-50.
50-50? Okay. Well, little victories, I guess. Better to be even than to be, you know, below. But that and the power play, what, 0 for 6, I believe it was. That's, I mean, it's easy to go, you know, 0 for 1 or 0 for 2 and be like, okay, well, the Devils' PK is just whatever. But to go 0 for 6 against the worst penalty kill in the league, like, something is going wrong here.
Yeah, I don't that's the one thing where I just can't help but scratch my head and go, what's wrong? Like, I don't get it. That you had the 5-on-3, which looked pretty toothless, to be completely honest. I don't understand it. Like, I don't know what they need to do. They need to change it up. You have to wonder, like, if the Sharks, you know, if the Sharks did, and I'm not saying they will, but if they did bow out the playoffs early and the playoffs, if the power play continues to suck, is Bob Bugner on his way out? Like, do you see a situation where maybe Doug Wilson, you know, maybe goes, you know, sends a message that way by removing some assistants?
It's very possible. I mean, I don't remember when exactly, but I remember a few years back, you know, under the Todd McClellan regime, it was always him and Jay Woodcroft. And then you saw a handful of guys come and go. Matt Shaw, right. Todd Richards, Jimmy Johnson, Larry Robinson, all those guys. I honestly wouldn't be surprised, especially like you said, if they fall apart in the first or second round of the playoffs with a just awful, awful power play. But, and you touched on it too, because I've seen countless people, you know, on Twitter and, you know, just in person, just saying, oh, the power play is this and we need to do this, this, this to fix it, and this guy's not getting it done. But honestly, I don't know what you can do. I mean, they've tried the big gun unit. They've swapped, you know, LeBanc in and Ward and Bodker, and I don't really know what would work short of just, you know, busting out the Todd McClellan blender and just see what you can do.
I mean, at this point, as it falls to the bottom, like, what do you have to lose? I mean, it's already in the bottom third of power plays in the league. So, to me, yeah. I'm like, what do you have to lose at this point? The playoffs are coming. Obviously, you're not going to get as many, you know, playoff. You're not going to get, you know, you don't really want to rely on your special teams in the playoffs, because especially the deeper you go, the more the whistles get swallowed. Mm-hmm. So maybe that helps the Sharks, the fact that, you know, at least they can score 5-on-5. But, at this point, to me, I would pull out the blender. I think you want to see if you can find something that sticks, instead of just being like, you know, we're 2/3 through the season now. You're just going to be like, oh, well, you know, this worked before, so this will work again. It's just a matter of when, right?
Right. And I mean, obviously you have to give it some time, you know, even if things aren't really working out, you got to, I mean, I think it was smart to keep the big unit together for as long as coach has, just because you can't get guys going if you don't give them the chance to begin with. But like you said, right, we're so late into the season, and in terms of the power play, things are so far back as it is. Why not just mess it up? You know, or why even, I mean, what's to stop Peter DeBoer from just throwing out his even strength lines on the power play? I mean, It appears to me that they do pretty well. Uh-oh.
We're in trouble now.
Oh, no.
Kevin Lacy, what's going on?
Hi, guys. You know, I was sitting around trying to get ready for the show, and then I was like, oh, yesterday I was told I'm not allowed to ever be on After Dark again if I don't wear the turtleneck. So I for you guys, reorganize what I was wearing and put a turtleneck on just nice for you. I am Kevin Lacy, 22. And I like that you guys brought up what happens to the coaching staff if the Sharks were to fail in the playoffs, because I was actually thinking this morning oh God, what if the Sharks were to lose in the first round of the playoffs? Like, what would happen to the roster, to the organization, to the fan base, like after going to the Cup Finals last year? And it's not like unheard of territory. We've seen teams that have made the finals and then not even make the playoffs the next year. The Sharks aren't in any danger of that. But right. Still, I don't know if it's a coaching change. Because yeah, you're right. The special teams stink pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Doug Wilson always has this history of just gutting the bottom six. And I feel like that they'd probably take the fall. I don't think it's just a McClellan thing, because it happened even before McClellan, back to the Ron Wilson days. So I'd worry if I was a bottom six forward about that. I think the D are fine defensively. The Sharks have been solid most of the year. So
if, let's say, the Sharks do lose in the first round of the playoffs, do you think that the alleged 3-year extension for Joe Thornton gets reconsidered?
Yes. Yes. I think that you already should be reconsidering it if you're Sharks management, because Thornton's still a great player, or a very good to great player. But he's not getting any younger, as the cliche is. Mm-hmm. And so the Sharks have been in cap hell all year. I mean, they've been in cap hell previous years, but it's been really noticeable this year. And yeah, everyone talks about they can't fit Patrick Marleau in next year. That's true. But if Joe Thornton's going to be pulling in another $5 million a year or something over the next 3 years, that's not going to make the financial situation any better. Like, yeah, keep Thornton, but he needs to be on a more cost-effective deal as well.
Yeah, Ian doesn't agree
with me.
Well, I mean, I just think like it's one of those guys where it leaves such a big hole. I don't think.
Oh, I'm not saying get rid of him.
I'm just saying if that's what he wants and you don't re-up him and he calls your bluff on that, like, I'm terrified of the hole that leaves in the lineup, because I don't think, you know, I've been on the record many, many times. I don't think Logan Couture is the number one center in this league.
Okay. That's where we disagree, but okay.
I don't think he is. He can't win a draw.
To be fair, nobody on the Sharks can win a draw.
I don't care. Thomas Hurdle can win all the draws. He's not a number one center on this team either.
Thomas Hurdle could go 10 for 9 on the faceoffs and they would still want to play him at left wing.
I know.
I'm going to cheap plug here. You know who could win some faceoffs? Curtis Brown. Happy birthday, big guy. Happy birthday. I love that guy. He needs to get on Twitter. I'll be his first follower.
I don't know. I'm afraid of what this team, like, I know it's coming and eventually we're going to have to deal with the reality that Joe Thornton's not going to be here anymore. I'm not ready. Not ready.
If only there was more time.
Yeah.
No, speaking of Joe Thornton, I know you guys have been on the show here for a little bit. And definitely for everyone out there, Pucknology After Dark is what you should be watching after the show. Sorry, Brody. However, I was simulcasting, I guess, After Dark and the Sharks Comcast Sportsnet post-game live. Joe Thornton, after the game, pulled a young, like, 3-year-old fan out of the crowd and his dad and took them into the locker room just because they were wearing Shark stuff. Like, nice. How cool is that? Like, and so they showed Thornton bringing him in and then Brent Burns walking up with a slice of pizza. Apparently Brent Burns is the new pizza rat. And he's just like, hey, what's going on, guys? So, I mean, that's such a cool thing for hockey. Hockey players are the best way to treat your fans, right?
I agree. That's very cool. I like that a lot. Where to go from here? Kevin, what did you think of the game overall? I don't know if we gave you game thoughts in yet.
You know, what I thought of the game was that I was asleep during the first period because the game was just that early and I had a really long night. And no, it wasn't that kind of long night. It was just a really long night. So I woke up and saw the shots were like 19-3. And I was like, Oh, well, I picked the Sharks to lose 3-0 tonight. So, well, they're losing right now, but hey, that's at least a good sign. And then that second period, man, the Brent Burns show. He was on fire. I tweeted out, especially after the Joe Thornton goal. Boy, I mean, Corey Schneider let his emotion get to him, and I didn't blame him because Corey Schneider did not see. He was double screened on all three of those goals in the second period. And it's like, all right, the defensemen for the Devils need to either block some shots or get the hell out of the way, because Schneider's one of the best goalies in the league. So if you're not going to stand there for him, get out of the way, because he will stop it. But thankfully for the Sharks, the Devils suck on defense. And Brent Burns, man, 24 goals. Holy cow.
Well, and you bring up a good point too, Kevin, because in the first intermission, they were interviewing David Schlemko on TV, and they asked him, how do you score against Corey Schneider? And he said, you have to get traffic to the net. Now, that is absolutely a cliche. You probably hear it at least once a minute in the world of hockey. But I thought it was really cool that the Sharks identified what they had to do and did it. Because we've seen countless times where they say, oh, you know, pucks in deep and shoot the puck and skate hard, and then it's more of the same.
And that's where a guy like David Schlemko really is valuable in that situation, because he was a Devil last year. Like, he knows that system. So, I mean, he, of anybody, should be the one to identify that. Well, besides the coaching staff. But yeah, so the Sharks made the adjustments, but still, like, they held their ground. Again, I missed the first period, but it sounded like they were very offensive heavy, which is good. Made some adjustments in what they did with that offense, but still pounded the Devils into the ground. It was great.
Well, I thought for me, like, watching the whole game, I think after the first period, I think the thing that really stood out to me was how much they simplified their game.
Okay.
Which I think, you know, sometimes that's really important too, where you know, you can go and you can try and play your system, but sometimes you just need to kind of strip it back to basics and then build it back up. And I thought the Sharks kind of did a really good job of that over the last two periods, where I thought they, you know, they really simplified things. Their plays, you know, they didn't make some of their, you know, super, this is the most beautiful pass in the planet, and watch me look at how awesome my pass is. I thought there was a significantly less of that.
There was a play in the second period. I don't remember. I think the Sharks were even strength, but it was like a tic-tac-toe play to Marleau. And that's like, good. Don't give the Devils time to set up defensively. Just pass, pass, pass. It didn't go in. But it was still like, that's a great play. You have the talent to pull off a play like that. Don't give the other team time to react to what you're going to do.
Right. No, I think you talked about, you know, simplifying the game, that sort of thing. Yesterday in the game against the Flyers, I believe it was in overtime, you know, Brent Burns is bringing the puck to the neutral zone, tries to pull the move, and then bobbles it, and Wayne Simmonds goes in and scores the OT winner. And it's stuff like that you don't want to see.
Let's look in the chat here quickly. Setoguchi on waivers.
Is he?
Hard pass.
Yeah.
Bring him home.
Hard pass.
You know Joe Thornton is talking to Doug Wilson like, I'll take a little bit less money in the offseason if you bring my buddy back.
Do we really need another, like, do we need more Mikhail Bodker, though?
Hey, but this particular Mikhail Bodker is at a very cap-friendly deal.
That's true, but it doesn't replace the Mikhail Bodker that's not going anywhere.
I don't know. All I'm saying, you put him on Jumbo's wing, and all of a sudden he starts feeling good, maybe scores like 10 in the playoffs. Who knows, Ian?
Maybe Kevin LeBanc scores 12.
Ooh.
Maybe. I don't know. Could be the comeback for all comebacks. Burns and Setoguchi.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, look, I get the sentiment behind, you know, bringing Setoguchi home, especially after everything he's been through. But the Sharks really, I mean.
Well, yeah,
that was a long time ago, guy. Like, you know, everyone's going to point to that LA game, and that was a long time ago, kids.
And like, it's nice to have feel good stories and all that, but Claude Lemieux was a feel-good story for the Sharks, and how well did that work out?
No, exactly.
Not at all.
There's something that really drives me crazy about this fan base is it can be, sometimes it can get just a little bit over, you know, over sentimental.
Yeah.
This reeks of that. I understand. Look at, I would like to be a good person too, but I also want to win the Stanley Cup. And I don't think that bringing on Seto, you know, a guy who, you know, look at, he's got some goods. I'm not saying Seto's a terrible hockey player, but it's not like he has a, you know, a ton of competition for ice time on the Kings right now on up top. I don't
think.
Well, here's the bottom line. The Sharks aren't winning the Stanley Cup until they bring back Jonathan Chychrun. So,
true.
Yeah, see, I do actually think that would be the sentimental comeback would actually be Chychrun. I don't think it's going to happen either, but
no, it's never
of the two. The guy I actually think Setoguchi has more potential than Chychrun, but I think Chychrun's the one they would bring back. Hey,
Chychrun is a KHL all-star.
He is. Because the KHL is a slower game.
Yeah.
He can't skate. I mean, the one thing about Chychrun was he wasn't a great skater to begin with. He had the double hernia surgery, and that was it. Like, he cannot keep up at the NHL level anymore.
You could probably put Chychrun in a wheelchair on Thornton's wing, and he still scores 50 goals, though. So
I know.
It also doesn't help when the KHL's own commentator, now mind you, I'm not a fan of the guy whatsoever, but when the KHL's own commentator says, Jonathan Chychrun doesn't play in the NHL anymore because he wasn't very good. Like, and he's one of the KHL's all-stars, like that.
The guy only has a Richard Trophy. I mean, like, you know, you can't take that away from him. Like,
no.
It doesn't matter. Yes, I know that, you know, lots of guys, except for this year, can score a bajillion goals on Thornton's wing. But, like, yeah, come on, people.
Mike Neves wants us to put the crack pipe down.
Yeah, okay. We should.
I want to know, because I think it's Mike Nevis, but it could be Mike Neves. Mike, how do we pronounce your name once and for all? Inquiring minds want to know.
Yes.
These are the things that we discuss here on Technology After Dark. on back-to-back games.
There's no graphics. There's just kind of just grab-ass conversation. It's pretty much what you expect.
Okay, this is not Sharks. It's sort of Sharks related. But you guys, on yesterday's, I almost said last night's, but I'm not going to pull a Landy. Yesterday's After Dark, after brunch.
After brunch.
We're hyping the Anaheim Washington game from last night. Mm-hmm. Washington, that was a high scoring game. I did not see any of it. But thankfully for the Sharks, the Ducks lost. Was that a good game? I'm just curious. Did you see it at all? Or
I was watching. What did I do yesterday? I feel
okay. Bam.
I was watching Barracuda.
If
they would have matched up for time, but. I the last game I watched was Barracuda, and then I went to bed because I'm exhausted.
All right, it's Mike Nevis, confirmed. Aaron Ward, confirmed.
Got it.
Confirmed.
Ryan Suter to Detroit, confirmed.
E5. It's kind of funny, actually.
Jerome McGinley's on the trade block again. We'll talk about that tonight on the writer's room, but we might get another Aaron Ward confirmed Jerome McGinley moment. If he goes back to Boston, though, oh good lord, what is Don Sweeney doing?
I don't think. I mean, that was another question you saw. Like, do you think? And I don't want to do too much because you know we're supposed to actually have something to talk about tonight too.
Yeah.
Before we kind of cover these topics, but like the LA Kings, they're an interesting team. Do you? I mean, I know they have cap issues, much like we do. Do you think they buy, sell? This is a question from the chat. Do they buy, sell? Stan Pat, what are you guys thinking?
Well, so what they should do is sell, but what they will do is buy, because as we've seen before, they think that a rental will solve all of their problems, and then it comes back to blow up in their face, like Andre Sekera, like Milan Lucic. The Kings are kind of in the same boat as the Detroit Red Wings, where they're still living off the high of, you know, a couple Stanley Cups, and they don't really want to look themselves in the mirror and say, oh, wow, this team is crap. We should probably fix it up a little bit.
Right.
So basically, the Kings are the ones that'll get Radim Vrbata.
And right. Just from Mike here, quick, yes, probably. Just from Mike here in the chat, quick, the team scouts who attended the game was the Chicago Blackhawks, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the New York Islanders, Vegas Golden Knights, Winnipeg Jets, and the Detroit Red Wings all had scouts in the house.
I love hearing that info whenever people say that. Like, keep that info coming, because that's just curious to me. I always want to know who's looking at who.
Bodker for Ladd, one for one.
Well, we almost, on last week's writer's room, we almost sold Kurt Price on Bodker for Patrick Berglund till we told him what Bodker's contract was.
That's true.
And then he said, oh, never mind.
Never mind. What the hell are you guys talking about? Put down the crack pipe. We can absolutely get Austin Matthews. I don't see why the Leafs, you know, what a bum that guy is. They're falling. They're free falling now. You know, all these kids are for nothing. It's totally time to just tear it all down. And I don't know.
I don't want Austin Matthews, because then we're gonna Santa Rosa's own.
God. Will he be the new Long Beach native? Yeah. Even though he was there for like a week or something, you know.
Yeah.
I breathed the air there for, you know, a couple of days, and then I left.
I'll get him and Brooks Orpik. Was San Ramon, did I say Santa Rosa? Eh, I don't care. I'm so over that.
That guy spitting fire in the chat.
Correct. No, it's all good.
Brooks Orpik, who was Brooks Orpik, who was born in San Francisco, but, you know, went to school in Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatchamacallit. So there's a Barracuda game tonight.
There is a Barracuda game tonight.
If y'all want to see me wearing a white turtleneck instead of a black turtleneck, tickets are on sale for as cheap as $10. And wait, why am I promoting this game more than the Barracuda? God!
Hey, there's going to be, like, from what I understand, there's going to be a few of us there tonight. No?
Awesome. Well, it's California Heritage Night or something like that.
Yeah, you California Heritage Night. I feel like I'm gonna just draw a blank now of all who's gonna be there, but I know you're going, I know Zach's going. That's why Writer's Room is late. Mm-hmm. I'll be there in spirit, like a right. Obi-Wan Kenobi right. Ghost figure guy. Look at AO12345 is going to be there. Look at
all right.
You guys are there. You guys need to hook up, need some pictures and
section 109. Although usually in the second period, I'm being a, I'm just kind of slutting my way around the arena to talking to all these different groups of people. So
it's probably Kevin. Say hi.
I can actually confirm that, because there was a Barracuda game that I was at. And Kevin is like, oh, I'm in this section. And so I didn't see him for the first period. Second period, he's sitting next to me the whole time. And then the third period, he just disappeared. And I was like, okay, bye, Kevin. All
right. Yeah, Christine's going to be there too. Look, you guys all need, we need
nice.
Of people watching Barracuda games.
Nice.
Technology takes over.
You can watch me almost win Chuck-a-Puck like I've done three times. Well, I did actually win once, but... twice. Oh man, I always seem to be that last roll that everyone goes.
I think somebody that you might not be a fan of might be rigging Chuck-a-Puck, Kevin.
Uh-oh. Damn it.
Hashtag Lacey for CUDA PA.
All right, so let's wrap this up. We're gonna look forward to our next game, which is Wednesday night in SAP Center versus the Florida Panthers. Florida's actually kind of turned around a little bit since their little coaching. Not really. I don't think it's the coaching firing so much as it's getting Huberto back and Barkov back. What do you guys think of this game against Florida?
Back on the Christmas non-PWR that I did by myself,
nice.
I was talking about how when you get these stars like Jaromir Jagr, these legends of the game that come into town, you need to go and see them. So, folks, Florida is not a big draw, but Jagr should be. So, go out to the game for one. I think that the Sharks, this obviously this win was crucial, but
yeah,
I think back to the other, I would say, low point of the season for the Sharks, and that ended, that got snapped on a win against the Devils 4-0 at home. So I'd like to think that this, again, is a turnaround here, and Florida had better watch out. Florida has been a lot better under Tom Rowe, which I say begrudgingly, but yeah. I still don't believe in them, and I think that they need to watch out, because if the Sharks play like this again, oh boy, it's going to be a fun night to attend, and not just because of Jágr.
I feel like every, you know, shitty team in the Eastern Conference has been on a good run lately, no?
Yeah, I mean, there's 7 points that separates the bottom from the second wild card seed.
Well, we know Detroit's not going to make it, so we can just eliminate them from that conversation right altogether.
To Buffalo, too, but that's me.
I don't know. I mean, well, yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know. The East is stupid.
The East is stupid. And, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a topic we're gonna seriously hammer tonight on the writer's room for sure. So 8:30 tonight. Come back for that.
Uh-huh. Oh,
don't come back here, because it won't be on this channel. It'll be on our channel. You just do the little search boxy in the YouTube and go Pucknology Writers Room, and you'll find us. It's going to be sweet.
Christine brought up a good point that somehow the Sharks and Panthers game is going to be the NBC Wednesday night rivalry.
The epic rivalry between the Panthers. Man, if I just go back and think of all those playoff series and all those messy, no, I just can't.
didn't Jaromir Jágr cut in front of Joe Thornton in the applesauce line at the retirement home?
Or? they're gonna have to throw down.
Maybe.
I mean, the only maybe interesting thing is if Reimer gets the start.
Oh, well, yeah.
Play him a video. Play him a video.
Play him.
Dude, play him a video of just his mask. His mask is awesome. Oh, by the way, congrats, James Reimer. You just had another kid. So, James.
Oh, hey, good for you.
Congrats.
Way to populate the planet.
Soon, Joe Thornton will be taking your kid out of the crowd to come down to the locker room. It won't be hard to find. There's no other fans in Florida. Oh, I went there.
Oh,
Puck guy with the gold. It all started when the Sharks traded Garpin Love and Duchesne in 1995.
Gaetan Duchesne? Did he just say that?
Yeah.
I remember a time when they traded Garpin Love. Shepard was traded to the Panthers and the heated rivalry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome poll, Puck guy.
That's an excellent poll. And then the weekend games they have next weekend, it's a pretty light Sharks week this week. On Arizona, they have a 5 p.m. Pacific start against the Arizona Coyotes in Arizona. And then they will finish before the bye week against the Boston Bruins, looking for, I would hope, revenge on both teams. And then it's the bye week. And then I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
There's going to be a lot of writers room and pucknologists during the bye week.
Yeah.
We'll figure something out.
That's a good point. I know Puck guy has some stuff in the oven. I'm going to be just looking to get some chill time in there, though. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good thing that you brought up. Obviously, if you like this show, if you like all our shows, you can always find them on our audio stream, which is on Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher,
MySpace,
everything. It's everywhere. If you can't find it, yes, the Pucknology Match game will be played during the bye week, so that you guys have something to do and we won't leave you completely hanging.
Ooh.
Other than that, though, I mean, that's pretty much it. I don't think there's much more to talk about.
Pucknology Game Show Week.
Yeah. This is going to be epic. All right.
Baking a pie.
watch the writer's room tonight. A little bit later start because of the Barracuda game, but it just, with my schedule, it was pretty much the only option to do it was later. So watch that. I'm hoping everyone's going to be here, because I'm going to be up super late so that we can do this thing and then go to school really early in the morning. Other than that, subscribe, hit up Audible, help us out. Other than that, good night, have a good afternoon, good night, whatever.
We'll see you later tonight, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I'll see you later. Bye.